Well, it's the news, according to it's the news according to me. That was sketchy. Whew, that was close. That was a close call there. I don't know what in the world happened there. Okay, so this is the second time I've started the show. It's Friday, July 31st. End of the week, end of the month. Not the end of the year, though. Originally, it was 9:37. It's now 9:53 a.m. I'm starting the show here in 2026 is the year. What a weird way to, that was weird. Because I really thought I had clicked the record button. Did I accidentally hit the done? I might have. For some reason, I wasn't recording earlier. I'm not sure what was going on. It had just like stopped completely, and it looked like I hadn't even pushed the record button. I should probably check and see what the last recording was on there. Anyway. I'm all confused. I'm a confused old man here. You kids get out of my yard. Who keeps turning these lights on? Anyway, I've got some chai here that's still hot because it's in an insulated cup. I think that's what the kids call it now. It's in an insulated cup. I have chai with coconut cream creamer in it, and I also have this sweet tea over here. That's awesome sweet tea. It's freshly brewed as of last night. It's got some peaches in it. It's not quite, the peaches haven't quite permeated the flavor yet. It takes a little while for that to happen. But it's getting there. But it is freshly brewed peach sweet tea. So at least it's the sweet tea part of it's got, that part of it's good. I have to figure out the rest of it here eventually, but oh, the Elkhart County Fair is going on right now. Elkhart County 4-H Fair is one of the largest fairs in the country. I think it is actually the largest 4-H county fair in the country. It rivals many state fairs. I think the New York State Fair, I think, is possibly bigger. It's not necessarily better, but it is bigger. And I think that's one of the only ones that's. There might be some other fairs out there that are state fairs that are actually bigger. That's one of the biggest county fairs, for sure. It's almost depressing when we go to someplace else that has a county fair. And I have to say, some of these county fairs are very small. And it's amazing how many big names they have at them, some of them. It's just, that kind of surprises me sometimes. But this fair, they've done things right for a long time. The board does a good job. They also manage things throughout the year with the fairgrounds very, very well. They keep it pretty busy, keep it active, which kind of helps with the just keeping things, the finances generated and things, improving. Had a storm hit a few years ago, took out a few buildings, took out some things, but they actually build things back. They build back better because, that's what we do here. We have interesting stuff going on. I wish I could talk more about politics today. This is the Financial Friday, and there's so much going on. The DNC is in a whirlwind because they're basically being taken over by the DSA, and the DSA has some momentum right now. And they still think that this is about getting Trump. We have to get Trump. I'm not going to get into it too much. I'm not going to start on the show here. I don't want to get into a rant, but Chuck Schumer was saying some things yesterday, and it made it very obvious. He was asked some questions about the DSA and some of the things that they're, some of their policies and some of the things they believe. It just went down the whole, just went on the tirade. Well, we have to work together to get rid of Trump, to stop Trump. 80%, or most of what Trump is going after is the 80% issues that people agree with. But because he's Trump, the Democrats have to oppose it. They can't just have the guy be successful. They can't allow any kind of success under this president because, you know, Orange Man bad. It's just this, and we don't care if the DSA is coming in and taking over because Orange Man bad, we have to fight. More importantly, we have to get rid of Trump. They gnash their teeth and foam at the mouth. And they have no other vision. They have no other, there's nothing for the. There was a guy yesterday trying to defend why he's a Democrat, but he's not a Democratic Socialist. And he was going on about this whole thing. And he was starting to realize that, hey, maybe this whole thing with the Democrat Party and everything that they believed has actually been progressing towards Democratic Socialism the whole time. I'll settle down. But I got to play this first before I get into too much stuff because, it's just what I do. I play stuff. We're gonna play this stuff, and then we're gonna be back after this little ditty. Here we go. That's loud.
I got opinions, and I'll share them every week. Pull up a chair, you're welcome here. This ain't no lecture seat. I've done my reading, done my thinking, had a cup or two. But I'm not your doctor, honey, so don't go blaming you know who. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer. I'm definitely not your financial advisor. This is just me talking, just a voice on a show. Take it or leave it, baby, that's all I know. These are my opinions, not the gospel truth. Entertainment only, so don't go calling up your news crew. I might say something that sounds real official-like, and sure, I've read a book or two, so sometimes I sound bright. But when it comes to your money or your health or your legal woes, please see a professional. I'm just a voice in your radio. I'm not liable, not responsible, not the final word, but I'm still here every week in case you haven't heard. Talk to your accountant, call your doctor, find a lawyer too, and after all that,
hey, come back, I'll entertain.
All right, that's all done. Let's get that out of the way. I'm sure the lawyers will have a heyday with that one. We have a few things going on. First of all, I'd like to just apologize for my voice is a little raspy. Still have a little bit of a sinus issue. Not as bad as it was. It's actually starting to clear up. But it's still kind of annoying, and it kind of causes my voice to be a little bit rough. Yeah, when I'm home, a lot of times I practice I do a lot of singing when I'm home. Sometimes when I'm home, and I'm trying to work on some vocal range stuff, and it actually is it has kind of a rough effect on your voice if you don't do it right. I have to be really careful to warm up properly. I'm trying to get some high notes out of there without going falsetto, and it's you can increase secret. You can increase your vocal range. Sometimes by as much as an octave, if you work at it long enough, and it takes a few weeks, it takes, you know, sometimes a couple months, you can get a full octave range higher of normal singing without flipping into falsetto, which falsetto is fine. It's a little weird, in my opinion. I just think falsetto is a little weird, but I was a big Bee Gees fan when I was a kid, and I believe it or not. I used to listen to the Bee Gees all the time. Of course, and they were a lot more popular than people. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like McDonald's. People say they don't go to McDonald's, but there's, you know, they serve a billion people a day, so somebody's going there. And it's it's just kind of a weird deal. But the Bee Gees were extremely popular, and they have a huge amount of hits. And of course, now they redid some stuff. They did some Beatles stuff. They did some other stuff. But they had a lot of original hits that were. It's still to this day are being played on the radio, and it's Barry Gibb. I was kind of more of an Andy Gibb fan. Andy was kind of off on his own for a while. Andy died early on. I think I was an Andy Gibb fan because I kind of looked like him when I was younger. I had the long blonde hair. Well, not long blonde hair, but I had blonde hair over my ears. The whole thing. It was kind of a. I didn't look anything like him in terms of like I wasn't, you know, my teeth aren't straight and my you know, face doesn't look the same. But I was kind of a, I looked more like him than Kiss. But that's that's about all I got to say about that. But anyway, the, we did all this stuff with the, okay, I'm all confused about where I'm at here so far. I had the recording thing going. I know I did on that first one. I made it about this point on the show. That's why I'm double checking, because I was kind of double checking some things. Anyway, by the way, the podcast caller app is up and running, and it's, the show's not, there's no, I have no advertising other than the, you know, there's no sponsor for the show other than me. I designed this podcast caller app, and it's, we're going to be using it today a little bit. I got a few things queued up, but I don't have the actual AI thing going on with the, all that stuff, but it's, I do need, well, I think what I need to do is put an API, an agentic system in the background where people can have their AI agents kind of run things. Because I could actually have the AI agent just I just lost my podcast caller for some reason. Well, that's interesting. It just went away. Wow, that's, what just happened? Reconnect, how about that? Hopefully I have, I don't know why, it just bounced out. I just got bumped out of there. Make sure all my stuff is the same. Yeah, it's still there. Everything I typed in is still there. But that was kind of weird, though. I lost the, I think that was a Chrome issue, actually. Google Chrome did something weird there. So I lost all the context from everything I was saying, which is probably fine for the. Anyway, what I was saying was the podcast caller app is, speaking of which, is kind of, if I have a sponsor, that's the only sponsor I have, is it's just kind of a, it's brought to you by thepodcastcaller.com. Just go to podcastcaller.com. You can sign up for the free trial. If you have a podcast, feel free to go there and check it out. Just see what, you know, it's, but that's, it's up to you. If you've got a podcast, you can try it out for a little while. There's a 2-week free trial. Actually, right now you can, the free trial goes on forever. That's going to go away. The free trial is going to be 14 days hard time. It's right now, you could probably run it for a month and it's not going to do anything, but there is a pay, you can sign up for it. There is a paid subscription and everything will be filled in later. There's some additional things that are going to be happening with, and it explains what you get with each membership. But right now you basically get everything. And then, cause there's not anything really there other than just the four callers, but there's going to be some more things happening, some additional things happening. And if you sign up now, you get all that within the next week or so. It's going to be all up and running. So if you do the free trial thing, by the end of the 2 weeks, it'll be, you know, everything will be up and running. Anyway, enough about that. We're going to be using some examples of that today. And there's going to be another podcast that just is a podcast caller podcast. In other words, it's a podcast about the podcast caller. But it's like a mirror within a mirror. A picture within a picture. Within a picture within a picture. Anyway, let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on financially. I've got this thing I was processing. Let's see if it's working. I don't know if it's, is it done? Oh, yeah, maybe not. Here it is. Car loans and investment, brief two sources. This is kind of the podcast within a podcast type thing. I have Notebook LM has apparently merged with Gemini now. The Notebook LM was a part of Google, and Gemini was Google's AI chatbot. Now they've apparently, when you go to Notebook LM now, apparently it just automatically somehow is connected to Gemini. I don't know how that works. I would assumed it would have been using the same thing as Gemini anyway, but I don't know. We got this. It's a minute and 49 seconds apparently it generated this thing. Now it's going to be interesting because these two videos that I plugged in as sources are two different things. They're two very different things. And another video, I might play parts of it just because it's Nick Invests is the name of the channel that I use a lot for this kind of stuff. And it's called Nick Invests on YouTube. And it's, one of the things that he, I think today's video was 20 people being financially illiterate. The other one was the biggest myths in personal finance. It was talking about some of the different things, but about personal finance and stuff. That so we're going to talk a little bit about globally, just some other things. And so I got some callers going to call. The call bots are going to call in. See, you know, I'm going to have some other things going on. But in the meantime, I think what we'll do is we'll just. That's what we'll go to with. I think initially we're just going to go with the call bots. See what they have to say. We'll just start right off here with you. We'll just start at the top of the list. Who's up here? I got Artie at the top here right now. So let's play this and see what Artie has to say. See if he comes in here and just jumps right through.
Good morning, Kevin. Yeah, good morning. I've been observing the issues with our financial education system in this country. Or should I say, our lack of financial education in this country. It seems that there is very little, if any, education in our public school systems about how to manage finances and what money actually
is.
That's
for sure.
What is your opinion on this? Do you have the same conclusion? Or have I just been living in a bubble?
Well, you're living in a bubble because you're a machine. But I think that what we have right now is we do have a serious educational problem in this country. That we have financially illiterate individuals. What's worse is we have people who are just plain illiterate. There are people graduating high school who cannot read. Cannot read. People who have been their families have lived here for generations. They go to school. They can't write in cursive. They can't understand. They can't spell at all on even a junior high level. We have kids that literally cannot read. They have a hard time reading anything. They grew up but apparently what's happening in some school systems is they just play videos. They don't really teach them reading and writing anymore. They barely teach arithmetic. I was shocked the other day. I actually walked up, handed somebody. I think our breakfast bill was $26 or something like that, and it was, which is ridiculous. Maybe it was more than that. I was going to leave a tip. So I said, you know, I had left the cash at the table, so I was going to do that. I think I handed them a 10. And a 20 with a penny. It was like 0.01 or something. I can't remember what the change was. It made it a little more difficult. Maybe it was 11 cents and I put something. I don't know. They needed to give me back a dollar, something, whatever it was, $5 and another dollar bill or something. It was a little bit complicated. I can't remember what it was. I wish I did. It was over a week ago. And I think that what ended up happening, and I was surprised. I was really surprised. I thought, okay, this is going to be too complicated for this person to figure out. They had to think about it. I mean, they could tell they were looking at it, and I thought they'd get their calculator out, or I thought the machine would probably do it for them. Like they put in, they didn't do anything with the cash register. They just pushed a button to open it to give me change. And it only took them about 5 seconds. They had to think through it. They looked at it, looked at the bill, and then they gave me back the proper change first time. I was absolutely shocked because this is in our local area here, in our local school system. So I have to say, we do have a tendency to have a pretty good school. So we pay for it in our taxes, our property taxes. But they figured it out. To their credit, I was pleasantly surprised. It was actually a pleasant shock. Normally, I'm looking at them, shaking my head, going, "Why can't you figure this out? It's not that difficult." Now, I kind of grew up having to do it. When I was in school, actually, when I got out of school, I spent a lot of time. We used to use cash all the time, so it wasn't quite as big of a deal. And actually, using credit cards was actually more difficult. We had the stupid machine, and to put the credit card in this little thing, like a little thing with a, and you put the receipt over the top of it. Then you had to run this thing back and forth across it to make it imprint on the receipt. It was all mechanical. And then you had them sign this tag, and then you had to, at the end of the day or whatever, you'd take all this stuff to the bank. They had to have a local merchant account in order to use credit cards. We didn't have anything online, believe it or not. And there was a day when we didn't have the internet, you know. And this is back when I was growing up. And so we had the, so you had this little thing, you had to slide back and forth. And it was, that was more difficult, figuring all that stuff out. And the cash thing, we just always dealt with cash. So you just always, just kind of grew up with that whole thing. And I was always in it, I was always doing work, it seemed like a lot anyway, not always. Sometimes I had a factory job, which I didn't have to do anything with figuring out making change for anybody. But there was a lot of times when I was doing things like, my dad had a small marina when we were growing up, when I was growing up. It's a little rundown thing that he bought and fixed it all back up again. It was a little thing on a lake here. And he, I basically worked during the day, during the summer, that was my summer job, pumping gas and stuff. He still was working full time. It wasn't like we had a lot of money, but he was just a hard worker, just a good provider. But we had a lot of things going on, and I would work at the marina. I think it was for $1 an hour. No, I think actually wasn't even $1 an hour. It was $1 for all the money that came through the launch ramp. We had a volunteer pay launch ramp thing where you could go down and launch your boat in the lake, and they were supposed to put $1 in the box. It was a voluntary thing. You put $1 in the box. And, of course, once in a while, we'd catch kids trying to fish dollars out of the box. But we had, I would get all the money out of the box. That was my pay. So if we had a rainy day, nobody was out there, I didn't get anything. If we had a sunny day, I got whatever was in the box. Some days were better than others. Some weekends were really, really, really popular. When there was a fishing contest or something going on, I would get all kinds of, get a lot of money. Sometimes I wouldn't even do much. But anyway, I was doing all that stuff, and I was always dealing with cash all the time, I was a petroleum transport engineer once for a gas station as well, where you check the gas, you check the oil, check all the fluids, you wash their windshield for them, do all that stuff. So full service gas stations, I was that guy, did that for a while, and. So yeah, I've just kind of been in that kind of realm, I guess, all the time. And I've always had, it just kind of came quickly. You start to get developing skills, as you say. It's just, you use it, you develop the ability to think through it. But so it's just one of those things where it's just, nowadays, I'm shocked that the kids can't do that, I guess. But I'm also shocked, when I find someone that does. It's even more shocking. Anyway. Let's jump in here. I think Artie's got something to. I guess Artie already did say something. Yeah. So I think financial education, in general, I don't think kids even understand what money is. There's nothing when I was growing up, the public school system doesn't teach anything about money or personal finance. The best they will do is teach you some math and how to fill out a ledger or how to balance your checkbook. That's about the extent that they go to. They really don't have an education on how to invest your money, how to save your money, how to work a budget. What's a workable budget? How do you really, and the moral side of, how do you spend money? How do you decide on what you're going to do? Yesterday we made a purchase. It was a rather large purchase, and it was one of those things where it looked like a very large purchase on an impulse buy. It was not. It's been about three or four years in the making that this impulse buy, if you want to call it that. Now I did make a decision right on the spot, but it was one of those things where I was pretty much determined that this year was going to be the year we were going to have to buy this thing, and it was because I'm going to buy it before winter. And because I've got there's some things I just know we're going to need, well, not necessarily need it, but it's going to be a very helpful thing. And so it was planned on, but I probably could have got a better deal. I did jump on it pretty quickly. They finally got all the numbers, but they were right up front with all the numbers and everything. And I appreciate that. It was one of those things where it's like, I could probably knock $1,000 off this thing. I bet they would. They'd probably give me a better deal. But they supposedly were already, knocking it down because I bought it at the fair. And they were giving me this special fair pricing. However, I also know that's kind of bogus. I know that I could have gone to the local. There's a local dealer here, not that far from me. I probably could have gotten the same deal, or pretty close to it. And it's But they always like to give you these other, they always like to slap all these other charges on stuff. And I just don't, you know, I'm not real big on all the other charges. So we got this thing. It's brand new. It's going to be coming in the next week or two, probably. It's going to be being delivered, hopefully, about the end of September, or end of August is hopefully when it gets here. We'll get it all set up. I was pretty impressed with the whole setup. But anyway, it's, yeah. So we're doing it.
Gonna do it.
Or I should say we did it. Now we just have to figure out how to pay for it. The, some icing out of sweet tea there. Yeah, so I've been rambling here. There's a lot for you to talk about. I'll let you go ahead and chime in. Did I push the button? I think I did. There we go. There you go, Artie. What do you think about all that? Give you a lot to chew on. Look, oops.
Financially literate people are actually rare these days.
Turned down.
And that's because schools don't teach the fundamentals of money management, budgeting, or delayed gratification.
I think I said all that.
What you did with that purchase is, technically speaking, exactly what financial education should produce. You spent 3 or 4 years thinking it through, set a deadline, knew your constraints, and made a deliberate choice rather than impulse buying.
Well, that's because I'm smart.
Even though it looked spontaneous on the surface,
yeah.
The fact that you caught yourself considering whether you left money on the table and understood the dealer psychology tells me you've basically self-taught what schools won't, probably because you grew up handling real cash and real stakes at your dad's marina.
Oh, yeah. I think I said all that. Yeah. Well, you caught most of the main points there. That's pretty impressive. Actually, but what do you think? What do you think, Artie? I want to know what you think. Do you think that there should be mandatory federal standards about some things, or do you think that it should be based on the local school board, that kind of thing, running the show? Do you think there should be programs available? Here's how I think it should go. You can give me your opinion as well, but I think that the government should have a program, and I don't have a problem with the Department of Education other than that they impose things too much, but they should have things that they provide and offer resources for schools to draw from, not necessarily to be mandatorily dictated over with, but it just to be, you know, resources that are available to them through the educational system. And some of those resources, in my opinion, should be financial management and understanding financial system, and as well as government, civics, that kind of thing. I think there should be resources available from government programs, from federal programs, to kind of help, you know, vetted sources that are, you know, used to kind of, and it's rather than just using the internet and trying to do a Google search and have an AI tell you some gobbledygook, you know, no offense, present company, but that's my opinion. Now, what do you think? Do you think that there should be more of a standard government standard, federal government standards, or do you think it should be based on local requirements, local, you know, state requirements, or, you know, just local school board? What do you think? I'm interested in getting your opinion on that, rather than just repeating everything I just said. What do you have to say?
I actually think you've got the sweet spot there. Federal resources without federal mandates lets local boards keep control while ensuring kids get vetted, quality content instead of whatever ChatGPT spits out. Technically speaking, that's what the Department of Education should be doing already through things like curriculum frameworks. But yeah, financial literacy and civics as offered resources rather than requirements would solve the problem without the heavy-handed top-down approach that kills local buy-in.
Yeah, that's. I just think it makes sense. That's just one of those Midwest common sense things we do here. I guess having said that, that's kind of where I'm at. Maybe I should run for school board, or maybe I should run for county something, or maybe I should run for governor, or maybe I should just run away. That's probably what I should do. We have, I'm going to skip the line here a little bit. I'm going to go down to Elena. Elena's the historian. She always talks about history. Historically speaking, I'm just going to see what she has to say. There she is. Oh, yeah. I said the word history, and she popped up at the top of the list. So we'll see what... Oops. Where'd she go? There she is.
Kevin.
Okay. Yes. That's me.
I'm wondering about the historical parallels to the current global economy right now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's hard to compare what is actually happening to anything like this in the past.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, we have more potential for a huge amount of growth, and at the same time, we're burning through so much wealth with the wars and the oil issues and the AI investments all going on at the same time.
Yeah.
Help me make some sense of this.
I don't... That doesn't make any sense to me. You know, the kind of economy we're in right now, globally as well as locally, is in terms of the United States economy. It's going to be interesting to see. I think that there's work alone on an ice cream spot, but each day is a customer. We're really at a tipping point, in my opinion. I think the economy can go either way. There are people who are very bullish and very positive, very optimistic, and I think that they have reason to be so. I can't argue with some of the reasoning behind some of the optimism. At the same time, there are some people who are pointing to some things that look like we could be headed for a disaster economically, both globally and the U.S. Now it could go a mix of the two. Global economy could tank and the U.S. economy could thrive. That's been very rare in history, from what I know. Maybe you can tell me there, Elena. Maybe you know of times that's happened where the U.S. economy has expanded and grown like crazy, while the rest of the country or rest of the world, I guess, is slacked off. Which gets me to, I want to make sure I'm up with this. That reminds me of a point I wanted to discuss about some things, but about the global economy. So I don't know. Maybe it's gone the other direction. I don't think the U.S. has ever been not in modern times anyway, where we've been in a tough situation and the rest of the world is thriving. It seems like the U.S. kind of drives the heart of the global economy. Which is why I think it's easy to be optimistic about the global economy if the U.S. is doing well. But if the U.S. tanks, then what's going to happen with the rest of the world? It's going to be. I just think there's a whole lot of things that could happen. But I think we are in a weird historical place right now in terms of trying to parallel it to anything from the past. There really is. I don't think there's ever really been a time like this. It could go either way. It all kind of. And of course, there could be a world event, tragic world event, or something that major tsunami or whatever could happen. That could always happen. Another outbreak, or something that would cause things to change.
You're touching on something real, Kevin.
Of course,
the immediate post-WWII era is probably the closest parallel. Where American industrial capacity and the dollar's strength let us thrive while Europe and Asia rebuilt.
True,
though
yeah.
that was more that, unique circumstance
yeah,
than
after
decoupling.
World War II, yeah.
The trickier historical pattern you're sensing is that deep U.S. recessions almost always ripple outward because, as you said, we're the engine. 1929, 2008, even the 1970s stagflation hit global markets hard, so genuine divergence is genuinely rare in the modern era.
Yeah, interesting that you mentioned the World War II thing. I was going to say something about that. After the World War II reconstruction of Europe and everything that was going on there, that was a time when the rest of the world was kind of hurting, and the U.S. had a huge thriving economy at that time, partially because we were the ones contractually and doing all of the development and the reconstruction of a lot of those places. They were leaning heavily on our resources to do that. So it gave us a lot of jobs. At the same time, that's the only time I'm aware of, at least in the modern history, in the last 200 years that I'm familiar with. Anyway, that the economy in the U.S. was thriving huge in terms of, it was a very offset kind of thing. Divergent, as you said. That's interesting. I guess the question that we have to ask here is what are the the pitfalls, the potential pitfalls, the unseen things that we might, you know, that could cause the economy to do a T. Here's my opinion. I think we're at a point where, and that's all it is just an opinion. We're at a point where the potential for our economy to just really take off, to kind of dodge a downturn, is upon us. I think that we have that opportunity. I think that it's also a very delicate balance. We need to get this thing in Iran done. Every time there's a talk, there's talk about, you know, every time they launch a missile, every time something happens over there, there it seems like there's this idea that, oh no, futures, you know, fuel prices have to go up again. They were way up there, they came back down again, and now they've kind of done a little tick upwards again. I think it's going to drop a lot. It can't drop too much because in some states the taxes are more than we used to pay for a gallon of gas. So I don't know how that's going to work. You're never going to see $2 a gallon gas in some of these states because some of them have almost $2 a gallon in tax. There's just the fuel companies that could give it away and still be $2 a gallon. So I don't. But we could potentially see that in parts of the country. I think it's possible. Especially with some of the infrastructure investments and things that are happening, and I think that, but that's the long game. I think that we're going to see some things. I know Bessent, financial secretary. I think didn't he say something just recently? It seemed like he was. Let me see if I can find this. I don't know where it happened to it now. I don't see it here. It might have been a short or something. Where did he go? He apparently was on a. Boy, I thought he was on a newscast where they kind of were asking him some tough questions, and he really came through with. Iran tried to shoot down Air Force One with a laser or something that might be kind of interesting. That was 2 days ago. What's going on with that? All right, so we got Anthony Fauci, by the way, has been under. He made a fool of himself the other day. You could tell he was starting to question whether his lawyers were giving him the right information or not. There's actually legal precedence for this, for something. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. Now there was something here, and I can't see it now. I don't know what happened to it. Where did it go? It was Bessent. I know that he was. He had some kind of discussion with someone in a. I can't find it. Anyway, sorry. I'm kind of going off on a tangent. So I don't know. That's my standard answer to everything is I don't know. That's kind of what it is. What's your thoughts? Can you find any parallels, I guess, to what was ever happened in the past and what's happening now? What's going on with all that?
The Iran situation is genuinely destabilizing because historically, every Middle East flare-up since the 70s oil embargo has spiked energy costs and derailed economic momentum.
Yeah.
So you're right to see that as the wild card that could tip us either way. On the tax floor you're hitting, that's a structural reality we haven't really solved since the Depression era. Fuel taxes lock in a baseline that makes the race to the bottom on pump prices almost impossible in high-tax states, which is why your $2 floor observation is spot on.
Of course it is, because I'm always spot on. I'm on the spot. I leave a spot wherever I stand. I have a... Boy, there's a whole lot of mail coming in. What you hear that background dinging you hear is all emails coming in. I don't know what in the world is going on there. Anyway, Let's see what else we got going. We'll be done with Elena now. Let's go on to Chloe. She's always interesting.
So, I'm confused. Is Apple Pay actually real money, or is it a point system? Well, what's going on here?
Well, Apple Pay is real money. I guess there's a video. I'll be playing a video here in a little bit. The audio part of it anyway. And you can guess. This lady, I'll be playing this thing. I'm going to play the other thing first, I think. But there's this lady talking about how she thought that Apple Pay was like Apple Points. Because she was using her phone and she was doing all this stuff with her phone. She thought she was, because she was using it, she was getting these Apple Pay things. She thought that was just magic points, like points that you get from, you know, like frequent flyer miles, frequent phone user miles. You just use your phone a lot and you magically get these. She found out that it was connected to her credit card, and all of a sudden she gets this credit card bill. And it's a huge amount of money, and she was all freaking out about it. We're going to play that after a little while. But yeah, it's real money. It charges up, it's US dollars you're spending. It's just kind of their credit cards. It's their debit card system, or whatever you want to call it. It's just a convenient way of bypassing having to pull your credit card out of your pocket or your debit card or whatever. It can be linked to your bank account or whatever it is. It's coming out of your, I'm amazed that people, this gets back to the whole financial illiteracy that we have in this country. Well, it's kind of sad, but that's kind of what happens. But yeah, they're real money. It's real money. Yeah.
Okay, but like, that's actually wild, though. The fact that someone thought Apple Pay was literally just free points you accumulate by existing is kind of peak Gen Z energy, honestly.
Yeah, it's true.
We're so used to apps rewarding us for breathing that real money just feels like a game sometimes. The scarier part is how many people probably don't realize that one-tap payment is literally just your actual bank account draining in real time, not some magical reward system.
Yeah, one of the things Dave Ramsey, one of the reasons he doesn't like debit cards and credit cards that are attached to your bank account or whatever. The convenience of being able to do it, there's something tactily that causes you to, when you hold cash in your hand, it's not as convenient. First of all, it takes, you know, you have to go to the bank to get the cash. And it's something that's intrinsically, it feels differently in your hand. And so when you actually use cash to spend something, there is a hesitancy for you to let go of that money. Whereas the credit card, the debit card, especially the tap, it's even easier now. You don't have to swipe it through a machine. You don't have to insert it into anything. You don't have to swipe it anywhere. All you do is tap it. Now, just hold it up there and then take it away. And now it can be done on your watch. Literally, I got a watch that I can pay. I can use Apple Pay on my watch. All I have to do is hold my watch up. I don't even have to pull a phone out of my pocket. Just hold my watch up there, and when it does its little thing, I just tap the little thing on the side and type in my little PIN number, and it automatically charges my account. So it's the convenience of it, and this feeling of not losing anything. I didn't give them anything. I didn't have to give them anything physical. The physical tactile feel of handing someone cash does something psychologically to us, and I think it makes it easier for us to spend. The impulse items are easier to spend on. Now you've got Amazon, who just keeps your credit card online, and you just type purchase now, and it's instantly purchased, and here it comes. It's like getting something in the mail. It's like Christmas every day, and you don't realize. There's a scripture called "Beware the little foxes." I think it's in Proverbs. It's the little stuff that you know. The little foxes are out there running around. They're eating the grapes, and you don't think about, oh, it's just a little fox. You're just gonna eat a few grapes. So they start eating more and more grapes, and every day, and it's, you know, three times a day, they're eating grapes, and the next thing you know, the vineyard is, you don't have any grapes. And it was all these little foxes. It was all the little stuff. It's all the little expenses that sneak in and take from you. And it's, now I'm not saying you shouldn't go out and live your life and, you know, enjoy life and do your thing and have some little treats here and now and then. But you've got to be deliberate about it. You got to be thinking, got to be aware, self-aware of that kind of stuff. You know, it's so easy to get caught up in sometimes the savings too. This happens. This is a whole other perspective. Kind of maybe down a different rabbit hole, but this idea, you know, you stop and think about it. If I've got to drive 20 miles to go to a place, let's say I want to go to Costco. I'm going to drive 20 miles to get over there to save money on the items I'm going to purchase. That's 20 miles there, 20 miles back. That's 40 miles. You have to figure out the cost per mile on your car that you're operating to get over there and back. You have to. This becomes critical. Now, the fact that I can save 10 cents a gallon or more sometimes on gas at Costco. So now it makes sense to go over there, get gas at a cheaper rate. So now you've already saved that money. Then you turn around and you save, you know, on all the items that you buy. So we've got a car with it. We've got a station wagon and we pretty much pack it full every time we go over there. Now, sometimes there's items in there, unfortunately, we probably shouldn't have bought. It's just, there were impulse items we bought. Just, hey, look at that. That's good. That I am bad about that. Especially electronic gadgets. I'm like a, just any kind of shiny object. I'll just, you know, look at that. All right, I need four of those. I need a 10 pack of that. Now it's, you know, sometimes it's stuff like mouthwash. I'll buy the dual container thing with the big gallon size thing of that. I'll be using it. It's one of those things. It doesn't spoil. Doesn't go bad. Buy a month's worth of that or whatever, or 2 months, I guess. And the, you know, if I just remember to brush my teeth, the what teeth I have left. I have a. So there's one of those things that it's you know, you have to make sure you make it worth your while. Am I going to save the $20 it costs to get over there and back, let alone the time it takes to get there and back? Or would I be better off going to, you know, so it's certainly not worth going over there to buy one item just because I can get eggs for a dollar off or whatever it is. It's you have to kind of plan that kind of an excursion. Make sure it's worthwhile. It's like driving 5 miles out of your way to save 2 cents a gallon on gas. That's just stupid. Now, my motorhome holds about 85 gallons of fuel. I typically, when it gets down, you know, low and I'm going to be buying 80 gallons of gas, sometimes it makes a difference. I'll drive 5 miles out of my way because I'm going to be, even if I save 5 cents a gallon, that's, you know, 80 gallons. You're talking about, you know, another whole gallon of fuel there. So I can burn a gallon to get that taken care of and save a little bit. But the further you drive to save that little bit of, you know, couple cents, the less it makes any sense to do so, especially when you're factoring your time into anything, any of that. So it's just one of those things where you got to figure cost per mile, not just the fuel price per mile, but the actual operating cost of that car, that vehicle. So it becomes more difficult. Anyway, that's kind of another side rabbit hole that I went down there. Sorry, but let's see what you have to say about all that. I'll let you have the final word. You go ahead. Just jump in there.
Honestly, the Dave Ramsey cash thing actually hits different, though. Like, there's legit psychology behind why swiping your watch feels frictionless compared to physically handing someone bills.
Yeah, that's what I said.
And that's exactly why companies designed it that way, yeah, to make spending feel invisible.
Yep.
But the irony is people think they're being smart by bulk buying at Costco when really they're just impulse buying shiny gadgets in bulk, which is like...
She got cut off. That was kind of apparently something happened there. I think you're just, you know, echoing things I was saying there. But the... I'm not saying all the shiny gadgets, you know, but they do a good job of... getting people to buy stuff that's maybe not necessarily stuff you need. So yeah, it's kind of a tough situation. And anyway, that's all I got to say about that. I want to play some of this stuff. I think this other thing I think is done. I'm going to play this overview. I think this is the right one. Yeah, we're gonna play this over you, see what it sounds like. It could be kind of loud. I don't know. This is going to be a minute and 49 seconds long, and we'll see what they
this
actually...
is the brief on the costly personal finance myth secretly draining your wealth. We're breaking down insights from Nick Invests to expose how the financial industry distracts you with small money guilt so you totally miss the massive mistakes actually emptying your bank account. First, let's contrast the small stuff we obsess over with what actually matters. Skipping a $5 latte might save you $184,000 over 30 years, but financing a new car for $770 a month instead of grabbing a $300 used one? That costs a staggering $570,000 in lost investment opportunity. Honestly, financing a brand new car is basically buying a house in installments and then just setting it on fire. Second, once you stop burning cash on cars, watch out for the silent theft inside your investments. A 1% active management fee seems harmless, right? But on a $500,000 portfolio over 30 years, that 1% literally steals $820,000 compared to a cheap 0.03% index fund. But surely paying a professional gets you better returns than a dumb index fund, right?
Not necessarily.
No way. Over 15 years, absolutely zero categories of active fund managers persistently beat the S&P 500.
That's very true.
Finally, if active managers are that bad, shouldn't we just hold cash until the market calms down? Well, caution is actually a trap. The market's absolute best days hide right inside its worst months. Sitting in cash and missing just the 30 best days over 30 years drops your annualized returns from 8.4% to a dismal 2.1%.
Yeah.
So is your quote-unquote safe 3.8% savings account actually the most dangerous place you could possibly put your money? Stop auditing your change jar and start protecting your vault by avoiding bad vehicle loans, ditching active management fees, and staying consistently invested in the market.
Yeah, this is where, especially younger folks, I think that makes a point there that it's you can't really outsmart the market. You can't be there the days that you really make those big gains. I think there's been all kinds of studies showing that, you know, just throw in your whatever it is, your 5%, 10%, whatever you want to throw into a savings account through into the market every month. Say you're throwing in $500 a month or whatever to a savings account. The steadiness of that, just continuously buying, regardless, every year you're putting in $6,000, and you just keep doing it for 10, 15, 20 years. The return, at some point, after 9 or 10 year point, typically, the growth that happens every year after that, it starts to outpace your actual your investment. In other words, your growth is big, larger than what you've put in it. It's going to be larger in a year than the 6,000 you put in it. Its growth was probably 8,000 on its own. So it's one of those things where it starts to outpace you and you're giving. Now you still want to, you're investing. You still want to keep putting that money in. And because, you know, it could go another 10 years. It just compounds even more. You have exponential growth, and then after that another 10 years or whatever, you've got you've got $16,000 of growth every year. At some point, it becomes about 70 or 80. Now, it's interesting because been looking at ours, it becomes a huge amount of money. What's going to eat that up is tax. Now tax management becomes a big issue, and of course there's the growth that happens every year, plus any kind of other assets that you own, whether it's your home or business, properties, I happen to have a backhoe that I bought for a decent price. It's one of those things where I can do work with it, which means I can actually make money with it if I really needed to. I don't really need to. I have it to kind of loan it out to people. And to finish up a project here, rather than renting one that I have to, have a set amount of time you can use it. And it's one of those things where you rent it for a week and you pay all that money. And if the weather is not good or whatever happens, that you can't get things done, then you got to rent another week. It's just kind of money down the toilet. Now, the fun part of this is, I bought a backhoe. I also bought a Bobcat. And it actually has you buy them right, and you keep them up, and you do some improvements or whatever. I'm going to be painting the one I've got. My Bobcat looks really good, but the backhoe, not so much. But if I get it painted and put some new, I've got a thing to make new hoses and fittings and stuff on it for the hydraulic system. And once I get that all done, I guarantee you I'm not going to lose any money on it. It's going to be worth, I'll be able to sell it for more than I paid for it, unless something weird happens with the economy. But if that happens, everything's lower and everything's cheaper anyway. It's kind of like with the housing market is, pretty relative to everything else going on, unless you happen to have a region where all of a sudden they find something in your area where the housing market tanks in your particular area. Typically, property values, continue to improve or stay stable with the rest of the relative economy. But, and of course, you have to figure in your property tax payments and all that stuff. But it's just the cost of living. It's just a cost of, having housing. You're buying housing, basically. You have to have shelter. So it's just going to be an expense at some point. You can't look at everything as an investment. It's just one of those things. But it's probably the better investment because you're able to use it for housing. Plus, it could appreciate to the point where it ends up paying off, well. So it's you have to kind of look through all this stuff from a larger frame, sometimes a larger lens, and then narrow down where, how you can kind of tweak things to make it more efficient and make things happen better. The interesting thing, though, is that, you get to a certain point in your life where, okay, now, when is it time to start spending and when is it time to start kind of enjoying what you can? The problem that you run into is some of these people who are really good savers, they save a lot of money. They end up dying with, $4 million, $5 million, $6 million in the bank with nothing, no place for it to go, nothing. They don't have a plan for that. And I'll share some personal stuff. We've established a foundation that will, as soon as, when we pass away, or we can put things into it now, which is what we're kind of hoping to get some things established and kind of things going here. But especially after I retire, we have more time to get some of this stuff kind of organized. But the foundation basically will. We don't have kids, so some of this money will go to some of our estate will go to the nieces and nephews and some of the folks around. And there's also going to be some funds going to now the foundation will be established. The bulk of what we have is going to be go into that foundation. That foundation is then out of its growth will provide scholarships, other kinds of funding. Our trust is set up so that it can, for a few years anyway, it will actually be able to provide funding some things for nieces and nephews. They can borrow money to buy a home or buy, it's kind of a basically a no interest rate kind of thing. They can borrow money from they have to have an approved loan from the trust, and then once both of us are gone and the trust kind of dissolves, gets to that point, everything goes into the foundation after that, and then the foundation basically goes on as a nonprofit. So it's hopefully going to last for about 100 years, maybe more. And it basically, out of the growth, it's a growth-managed fund is what it's going to be from, or if we, have that managed from, with a board that kind of oversees it, that kind of thing, from a couple different entities. And then theoretically, as long as those entities stay in place, they can there's processes for it to be replaced and all that kind of stuff. All the contingencies have been kind of supposedly at least thought through. They haven't really been nailed down yet, but we have some time for that, hopefully. Unless something tragic happens, but the lawyers know our intentions. They know which will be. That's what's going to be fought in court if the state tries to come in and just take it all. But basically that's what's happening with all that. And so we've kind of established that as the to not just the, I guess there's going to be a future life for that. For those funds, for that thing to kind of keep going on, kind of a giving back type thing. And at some point, what's interesting about all that is how we still need to live in the meantime, and hopefully our medical bills, that kind of thing, will not eat up everything. We can kind of live a normal life and kind of die a normal death without having, you know, $1 million worth of medical bills for some reason. So that's all we're going to do is suck up money to keep me alive for another 6 months or whatever. It's kind of worthless, kind of stupid. But in the meantime, we have, you know, there's just all the things that are going to happen there. You have, hopefully, you know, set it up so that, you know, we've set everything up so that it can keep on going and keep on giving beyond our life. So that's what's happened with all that. Now, I don't know. There's a movie coming out. For any of you who have ever learned anything about the Hershey family, the Hershey Chocolate Factory family, Hershey, Pennsylvania, look into that story. It's actually something I learned about after we kind of had this. I kind of had this whole vision of how we could set things up with our own family and with our own estate, if you will, and. I learned a lot about. I'd kind of like to see the movie, and kind of like not to see. It's not something. I think I'd be very emotional. I've seen some trailers, and I was pretty emotional about it. Just even watching the trailer, it was kind of looked like it was a little tough. But in the meantime, I guess I'm going kind of long on the show here. But the premise of the show and what the Hershey family did and everything that happened with them what they established and set up it's not very well known about, but they have made a huge impact on our society. It gave me a very, not, of course, it's not the same company that it was then, and the chocolate's not as good either, but still you have a company that and a vision. It's very kind of very similar to what, ironically, to what I've kind of got in my head about how things should kind of be worked out with all that stuff. But so anyway, there you go. That's all I got to say about that. We have, let's just play. I don't know what this one is. I think this, let's play this. We'll just do it. I don't know what it is. Let's try it and see what it is. Oh, here. Oh, it's loud. Yes. Oh, it's this. Yeah. It's the phone number song.
Five, seven, four.
But wait, there's more.
Okay.
6, 5, 1. We're almost done. 7, 6, and 85. Text that number. It's alive. Text that number. Call that number. Don't be a loser.
Yeah, you could try that number. I don't know if I don't even know if it still works or not. It may not work. I don't know. You could try it. You could try texting it or if calling it. I don't know. Wherever you are. Wherever you are. I think, I don't know. It's, I think it's googlevoice.com is where it's at. I think it's where, if you're a member there, if you got a regular phone, just call the number. I don't know. I'm not into that old technical stuff. All right, folks. Just to kind of give you some idea about what's going on, we have, by the way, Shabbat Shalom. It's Friday, going into a big weekend here. Got some, going to be spending some time on the sailboat this weekend. I've got a few more days off. I'm off till Thursday next week. So we're going to get some things done. I'm hoping to get some things done around here. I can get some projects actually started and stopped. I don't have to worry about just being home for a couple days and leaving again right away. I have, And then I got some vacation coming up, which I'm really looking forward to, but I'm hoping to get some things done before vacation. Anyway, besides all that, we have coming up on Monday's show. It'll be Mishmash Monday. I believe at that point the bots will be all working well. We'll have some other additions to the podcast caller, so we're going to be doing some of that kind of stuff. And we've got, what else we got going on? We got Tuesday, Technical Tuesday, Wednesday, Wishy Washy Wednesday, and then Thursday morning. There'll also be a show on Thursday morning. It'll be pretty early. And then Friday, a show from somewhere. I think Columbia, Missouri. I'm not sure. God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your day, rest of your week, weekend. See ya.